AGM of October, a team from the Department of Trade and Industry. We do right at the offset want to offer the apology from the Minister. We have the written apology here indicating that this clashes with the Cabinet Committee meetings. But he is also saying that he is representing four items to us tomorrow, and he will touch on some elements of the annual report in that. And he has given that authority and has confidence in the capacity of the DG and the team with the various DGGs who are here to support him to represent the Department of Trade and Industry competently in this meeting. We also have a written apology here from Honorable Faber. Honorable Faber informed the DA office that he is ill, and therefore the apology comes from the office, which we both appreciate. I do not know what has happened with the other two members, so if they don't join us later, it will be recorded as absent. Also, honorable members, we will not be presenting to you the minutes of our last meeting, because I've just checked with our support staff and the minutes has not been circulated. You have hard copies in the meeting now, but we will deal with the minutes when we get to our next meeting next week, Wednesday. Unlike the other committee where the meeting for next week, Wednesday, is not that listed, our meeting is that listed. We will have the Department of Tourism, am I right? Or is it International Relations Tourism next week? The Department of Tourism, not South African Tourism. The Department of Tourism would give us the annual report next week. We appreciate the report that we've received from DTI. I want to apologize, honorable members, that the size of the report inhibited us from emailing it to you. The Parliament's email facility has a limit on the size of the report that can be sent. So therefore, we have made hard copies. I trust that you have received it in your pigeonholes. Can I just test with you?
No.
You have not received it in your pigeonholes?
No.
Honorable Khai didn't get it. Who else didn't get it? Honorable Dikhale. Honorable Mtimunya. I just wanted you to note that, Martins, that this pigeonhole thing is problematic. Can we check, Honorable Lord, do you know where your pigeonhole is? Are you also only receiving it now?
No, I received it.
You received it? Okay.
Do you have a copy, sir?
Do you want to approve it, sort it where? Which app? Honourable members, I'm just reminded by the secretary that the IT guys in Parliament wants to help us. They want to download on our systems the My Parliament app, which would enable us to send bigger documents. So can I kindly then request that when we convene next week, Wednesday, you bring your iPad with you, so that we can, or if you use your laptop, so that they can download it. It will be done here for us. Am I capturing it right? Thank you. What about that?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I just want to request that, you know, documents such as the annual reports, the strategy plan, the APP, once these are tabled by departments, they must be immediately sent to members. We don't have to wait for a week before the department is invited, because those documents are readily available. So I want to suggest that going forward. so that all that we wait for is the PowerPoint presentation on key areas that the department will take from these documents, but also the analysis by our committee researchers and consultants can also be sent in advance. It's a question of going to these documents. All that we should be waiting for is a the kind of representation that the department is going to be making. Otherwise, the annual report itself has been there for some time. So I'm suggesting that going forward, these documents, once they are tabled, they must be distributed to members in advance. Thanks, Chair.
Rebecca, do you have that noted?
For our department, for our select committee, it's fairly easy because we're basically talking about two departments, but for DTI on DG, we have the 13 units. We had a discussion on that yesterday. So we would appreciate if the 13 units in DTI can also send us the APPs well in advance, just so that we have that. Because in this meeting, that's not what they're presenting to us. They're presenting to us the PowerPoint. So we can get that later on. But it helps if we have had the full printed document with us. And Saroj, please, then we've dealt with one department on that. And you send it to the secretary, and the secretary will then make sure that it gets to whoever's responsibility is to circulate that. Honorable Dikale?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I want to be on the issue of IT. We appreciate that they will help us, but will we have time in a committee meeting? Why don't they arrange early before we come to the meeting?
Okay, Kupeka, thank you, Honorable Dikale. Kupeka will check with them. We are making that. It will let them be here by 9:30. Then we can be here 9:30 to deal with that. There's only... Don't contradict yourself, because you said before the meeting, and that's what we're trying to arrange now, to have it before the meeting. Okay. Let's also welcome KPMG and the support staff in the meeting, and hand over immediately to the DG to lead us. DG, could we agree, it is now 10:10, say that we look at finishing with the presentation at 11:00, so we're giving you 15 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity to present our 15-16 annual report. Maybe before I start, if I can just ask the team to introduce themselves. I'm Lionel October, Director General of the Department.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Member. Stephen Annable, I'm the Chief Economist at DTI.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Tumelo Balene from the CCRD.
Good morning.
Tell us, please.
I'm the Chief Operating Officer in CCRD, Chair.
Consumer and Corporate Regulation.
Good morning. My name is Malevuma Victor Thompson from the DTI, Deputy Director General responsible for incentives, their administration and design. Thanks.
Morning. I'm Hayley Rodkin, Chief Director, Strategy Management and Public Entity Oversight. And just to note an apology from Jody Scorps, the Group Operations Officer.
Thank you very much. The Parliamentary Officer.
I'm going to then, given that I think the committee is quite familiar with the department and some of the issues, I'm really going to do most of the focus on just highlighting the key achievements. And as I said, there is a full copy of our annual report, which sets out the progress in some detail. There will also be quite a detailed breakdown, as you've requested at previous sessions, about the distribution of our incentives across the provinces. So there is quite a detail. I won't go into each and every one, but we will highlight it, and you can read the full one. And so just to remind again, just before we get into the detail, our overall vision in the department is really about the real economy. We're trying to create jobs in the economy. We're trying to spread economic activity across the country, but mainly we want to get a focus away from just fiscal and monetary and financial policies, but really focus on the industrial or the real economy. That's what DTI is about, and that is what all our programs are about. Before getting into the highlights, it's obviously important, because we are a small, open economy, where we have big part of our economy exposed to the global market, we need to just take account of what has happened. I mean, as you know, we are still, even though we are trying to diversify, we are still essentially a mining economy. And we have seen now quite a decline in the mining industry, and that is driven by global factors. We've seen a decline in some of our core mineral commodities, especially the main one, as you know, is platinum. I've seen a 32% decline in prices, and that is a reflection of a lack of or a reduction in demand globally for our platinum, for our gold, for our iron ore and coal. The good news is since this period, there is some upturn. You can see even in today's paper, Anglo-American's share price has improved by almost over 100%, but that is because there's been a slight upturn in the commodity cycle. We just hope it is permanent. The other problem we experience globally is that there is a global glut of steel. Because of reduced demand in the global economy, there's overcapacity, especially in China, and therefore we can see that has impacted on our steel industry, on Middleburg, on ArcelorMittal, and that is a result of global factors. And then more generally, we know that in the leading economies, they are all have not yet recovered from the global recession, and they are expecting with all kinds of monetary tools. As I said, our approach is really to deal with the structural problems and to focus on the real economy rather than focusing on monetary stimulus for our economy. This is just an indication of globally. A number of countries are experiencing slow growth. So I think whilst we do... We are concerned about growth in our own economy. We must understand that other economies are really, Nigeria is in a recession, Brazil, Canada, Russia, all of them are experiencing quite negative growth rates. And that is, again, because of overexposure in Nigeria's case to oil and to one or two mineral commodities, and that's why we always make the case for diversification and industrialization. So that we don't fall into that trap. If we look at the domestic economy, there is some positive news in quarter two. Really positive news. We've avoided a technical recession, and what we've seen there, as I indicated, the one really bright spot, and as the minister always says, whilst we mustn't become overconfident, there seems to be at least some stability now emerging in the manufacturing sector, and it grew by 8%. And even mining started to recover from its serious downturn. But as we can see, also we faced the worst drought. But at least things are, or let's say, the decline in the agriculture is slowing down. So hopefully, as I said, these factors will be improving, especially mining will hopefully start recovering, and then also agriculture will slowly be coming out of the drought. This is also just an indication of PMI. I won't go into that. Just a last point about employment and the currency. As we can see, there has been a general depreciation in the currency. On the one hand, it has been positive because you will see next slide, you'll see later on that we managed to, for the first time, develop a trade surplus. And as you know, that has always been our Achilles heel, is that our imports exceed our exports. So there is some positive development on the export front, 294 billion in quarter two, and in total there was an 18% increase in manufactured exports in that period. As I said, let me just turn to the jobs front again. Here we face a peculiar problem. If we take over a longer period, we see since 2010 we've created 2.3 million jobs. So I think it's the one thing which is not properly known is that the economy was creating and has been creating jobs, 2.3 million. But because of our demographics and especially what is called as the youth bulge, 3.2 million people entered the labor market. So whilst we are growing jobs, we are not growing fast enough to absorb our young labor force, and that is why you will see the unemployment statistics are not changing. So this gives us a reason to really start emphasizing now more the real economy, and especially agro-processing and agriculture, where we can have more labor-intensive growth. As I said, I've dealt with this issue. There is some positive development on the export front, and especially our exports of manufactured products to the continent. And so let me then now turn to our key achievements. As I indicated, we start off with what we call localization or designation. And as you can see, what we've done in 2015-16 and 2016, this is a program which is about now 5 years old, where we are compelling that the whole of government, municipalities, state-owned enterprises, when we designate a product, they must all buy locally. And as I said, we've over the past 5 years, we've done over 20 designations, from textile clothing and footwear to pharmaceuticals to electric power cables to working vessels, boats and ships to valves, and so on. And what you will see later on in the report, wherever we've designated the product, we can see a revival in that. I was just talking about to the chair about the locomotive industry. As you can see, there are lots of locomotive products that we've designated for Transnet, PRASA, and so on, and you will see then how we've started to revive those sectors again. This is again a key example then of Aberdare Cables, which is part of the PowerTech group, where we designated this product, and as a result in investment by Aberdare Cables and creation of jobs to produce these locomotive cables. We then turn, so the one sector we're starting to revive is our locomotive and rail industry from where it was. The other positive development in industrial development is the investments in our auto industry, but it's not only BMW. It is also, we have a minister launched this opening with the president, and this is now, as you know, the Sesfikili quantum taxis used to be produced in Japan. It is now being produced fully in South Africa, and this is the Toyota plant where they are producing the minibus vehicles. Similarly, we've also now diversified more into trucks and buses. And again, the buses is because of the designation where all the BRT from my city to Rea Vaya to Arieng, all of these buses are now bought locally, and therefore companies like Daimler have invested now and Busmark have invested in the in this industry. So this is the expansion of Daimler into bus and trucks. But then also we see the development of the component industry, because we are requiring higher and higher levels of localization. This is Goodyear making an investment of 670 million in their plant in Uitenhage. But it's across the board, as I said, 25 billion of investment in autos and components. This is in Silverton. the Ford plant, and as you can see, $2.5 billion investment. It's really a large investment. They're going to be making the Ford Everest SUVs, 1,000 new jobs created very close to Pretoria. Same with VW in Uitenhage, and then Volvo also in distribution settlement. And then further on, we also see investments by Nissan, which is also in Rosslyn, and they've relaunched the Datsun, creating new jobs. And then, as I said, it's also moving into the trucks and buses. So you can see the, we can now confidently say that in the auto industry, it's across the board, the development or the revitalization of our automotive sector. And then the other sector that has been growing in terms of investments and the use of our tax, you heard from Malebo, heads up that division. And they've really, over the past few years, improved the turnaround times in which we pay out incentives. And this is the 12i tax incentive that was given to Unilever. We now produce, instead of importing all our magnums, we are now producing these locally, this is the Unilever plant. Also, looking at new technologies, and this is a joint venture with Anglo-American Platinum, Amplats, and we're doing geothermal technologies to generate energy. Then the other area which is now starting to see a revival is the clothing, textile, and footwear sector, and especially we've been managed to make a breakthrough with using our incentive programs to draw the retailers like Foschini to buy local, and we've seen in total about 10,000. We've stabilized the industry. But also they're starting to create about 10,000 new jobs and about 29 if I'm absolutely correct, is new leather factories have been opened, and for the first time in almost 20 years, you see investments investors going back into the leather industry to produce for this sector. Similarly, we've been using our incentive very creatively to get companies like Nestle to invest in backward linkages. Here, as you know, our favorite Ric coffee, it is produced from chicory, which used to be imported from India. Chicory production is now being done in the Eastern Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal, and this is a program where we've created 800 new jobs in the production of chicory for Nestle. And this is the backward linkages into agriculture from our industry. This is the ceremony where the minister launched this chicory development program in the Eastern Cape in Alexander. Further, we also, it's not only the manufacturing sector, it's also logistics is a major part, and here is the launch of a $1 million investment by Grindrod into an intermodal facility. Then turning away from manufacturing to some of the services sectors, there's two big sectors, which is film, and then the BPOs, or what we call business processing out center, or what is commonly known as call centers. Here again, we see there is now a stabilization of constant flow of making of movies into our sector. And as you can see, a lot of local movies are being made from Ayanda to Trierhond, and Puppet Nation and so on, which is we still rely a lot on obviously Hollywood to make movies, but as I said, there is a move towards trying to increase greater local productions. But the film industry is now on the stage to maturing, and we are hoping to deepen then and also expand into more black filmmakers entering the space. The other sector which has revived from, as I said, from a major downturn for the past 10, 15 years, is our boat and shipbuilding. This comes out of the Operation Pakisa for the ocean economy, but also we designated these products, the South African Navy and Transnet with their tugboats are buying locally now. And here you see South African shipyards in KZN. They've invested $1.4 billion. We've also seen Smita Mandla Marine partnering with Damon Shipyards. They've made investment both in Cape Town and in Durban harbor ports. And then Saltia Holdings and Nautic Africa are all companies, boat shipbuilding companies, that we've given incentives to, but they've now started to rebuild the ships, and Minister just launched one of the docks that they've expanded in Durban Port in order to make our boats and ship building industry. And then again, as we've said, fuel, gas, and so on. This is the Bergen Fuel Terminals in Cape Town Harbour. The other incentives we manage is SPY and TRIP, which is our new technology programs. This is where we support technologies, and these programs have been brought back into the department, and we are now managing it within the DTI, and there's the details in our annual report. This slide just gives you an overall summary then of all our incentives, right from the aquaculture program, which is also starting to take off, the automotive incentive investment, the 12i tax incentive, critical infrastructure, and then the BPOs. In total, as you can see, there is about 70,000 jobs that we're either sustaining or new jobs created. And then, as you can see, it's about 300 companies that have been covered so far under this program. Then, as I said, I'm not going to go into detail, but this is our different incentives, and this is the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program, and then we provide a breakdown. As you can see, we are not there yet, but there is an improvement in the spread of our incentives across our provinces. These are some of the leading companies that are doing. As you can see, it's a mix of big and small companies, but even our national champions, like Sappi, Uleman, Anglo-Val Industries, Mondi, have all been benefiting from our industrial incentives. As I say, we always, all our incentives are tied to new investment by the private sector. And for every R1 we put in, we generate another R4 from the private sector. And that's why we can ensure that we always, our incentive is tied to expansion of productive capacity, or as some people would call the means of production is expanded. This is our EMEA, this is our assisting companies with breaking into export markets, and here you can see again also the spread is quite broad. As you can see, the Free State, there's 5 approvals, in Northern Cape, 2 approvals. And the rest is laid out. Limpopo is quite good here with 11 approvals for the EMEA program. This is the 12i tax allowance. Again, as I said, it still reflects our basic concentration of our manufacturing sector, which is concentrated in obviously in Gauteng, the Durban area, and then the Western Cape, and then part of the Eastern Cape is really the hub of our manufacturing activities, and you will see that is reflected in it. These are some of the companies benefiting from our 12i tax incentive, and as you can see, it's a mix of different countries, but what you see is strong agro-processing as well coming in with clover, the dairy sector, woodlands, dairy, and others. This is our proposal for the automotive sector, and again here you will see the concentration of the automotive industry in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Eastern Cape. This is the, again also automotive assessment, and I think the committee is familiar with companies like FAW, the Chinese company in Kuha, which are now joined by Beijing Automotive Works as well. Then this is the film incentive, and again, we give you a detailed breakdown of the provinces. As I said, there are obviously two leading provinces in terms of the making of films, which is really Gauteng and the Western Cape with regards to the foam industry. And I think the other provinces are coming on board now. The reason the Western Cape is doing so well is because of the construction of the film studio, which was a joint government private sector initiative. We built a film studio. We are also promoting that now in other provinces so that you can provide the infrastructure support to the film industry. Again, there's a breakdown, and as you can see, the approvals. Whilst it is being stated, it is still concentrated in the two. These are just some of the movies that have been made, and as you say, we do at least have The Crossing Borders, which was made in Mpumalanga, and for the scenery there. This is the business processing outsourcing, and again, these ones, the very good thing about these call centers is that they are very, very labor intensive. If you look, for example, here at WebHelp, which is 2,400 people employed on it. In the merchants, 1,300. And there are some call centers in Durban, CIC, which is sometimes employing 5,000 people in these call centers. So this incentive is very important, and also it acts as a conduit, especially for young workers and dealing with the youth unemployment. This is critical infrastructure program. This is where we support roads or bridges or dams required IT infrastructure in different parts of the country. Let me then turn, that is industrial development. So as you can see, the main job is to recreate and rebuild all our industries from shipbuilding to rail, to reviving clothing and textile, and I think we at least are seeing some positive progress. It is not sustained yet. We need to continue this for another few years before we can say we have revitalized these industries, but we are on the right track. Turning to trade, the big one we are busy with is the tripartite free trade area, which is basically SADC, Southern Africa, East African Community, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, and then right up to Egypt. This we hope to, even currently we've done a lot of work over the past 12 months, and we hope that we can try to push this agreement to find a finalization by year end, or hopefully in the first quarter of next year, but this will really improve on intra-African trade. As I said, we've been a big focus on the continent. It is becoming our biggest market for manufactured products, and these are the trade and cooperation agreements we've entered into with Senegal, Zimbabwe, Mauritania, Botswana, Zimbabwe. Also, part of our growing our trade initiatives, we've facilitated a large number of trade missions. We've generated 833 leads, and that exceeds our target. Conducted 50 export awareness programs, and over 2,000 companies have gone through our global export passport program. That is a program where we give for new and emerging exporters. We take them through different phases, and we say they then get a export passport. That means they become export ready and they can go with us. We've generated sales through these different trade missions of 5.5 billion. And then the other positive development is our investment pipeline with the formation of Invest SA, Invest South Africa, which we launched, the one-stop shop, which we launched. We are generating 92 billion is the pipeline we're working on. This is just to show the spread of our investment. This is a 5 billion solar power plant built by the Saudis in Bokwart in Northern Cape. This was all part of the RIPP program, which again emphasizes why we must keep this RIPP program going, because we are bringing in outside private capital into this sector. And it is very important. Similarly, on the investment front, whilst we signed this agreement in December last year, what is important is that this investment has now been taken off the ground, I think Malebo went there a few weeks ago. They are clearing the site in Kuha. This is a 12 billion rand investment by Beijing Automotive Works. So one of the top 40 companies in China. They have made 12 billion, which is the biggest investment in over 40 years on the continent, the biggest on the continent. It is in Kuha. They will be starting off with a production of 15,000 vehicles, and they will be hopefully moving to 100,000. These numbers are important because this is the numbers which, as I said, the Mercedes-Benzes are starting to also produce at 100,000, 150,000 vehicles. But this is a significant investment not only for the Eastern Cape, but the revival of and then the Kuha Industrial Development Zone. The other, as I said, we are trying to maximize our partnership with the People's Republic of China, and we're turning it not into just a... We said we must change the model of just every country producing and exporting to other countries. We must co-invest in each other's economies. And this is what our work with China is about, them buying more value-added products from South Africa, but also investing and producing in South Africa as per the Beijing Automotive case. We've also developed a number of business fora to Nigeria, which is, again, our biggest market in West Africa. And then also a big market for us is Saudi Arabia, especially for food and agro-processing products. But we're also trying to, we've done Iran, which is now, after the sanctions, is opening up. And is a really a big, big market and a growing market, and that's why we've done that. Also, Zimbabwe remains an important partner. This is just one company, Weatherhaven, which is an African company, which we took to Angola, and they've managed to generate sales from the Angolan army, and we are producing tents for the Angolan army. And this is a 150 million order that was won by Weatherhaven. On the investment front, we also passed, and thanks to your support, the Protection of Investment Act 2015. We've now got, instead of having hundreds of bilateral investment treaties, we've got one Protection of Investment Act, which means all countries who want to invest, their investment is protected as per our constitution, and this act just sort of consolidates our constitutionally protected investments. But it's a protection because, as you know, many countries like the US, Japan, was never covered by bilateral treaties, and now everybody who invests can be covered, and this gives real comfort to investment. And as you can see, immediately after this act was done, we saw also big investments from Europe, the US, and China. The other area is diversifying our economic opportunities to the special economic zone. So we've done a lot of work around consolidating the legislation, putting the advisory boards in place, and issuing guidelines. As you can see, we've developed guidelines of good practice for companies operating on the continent, because, as you know, companies, because we have to be good business and corporate citizens if we are going to keep being welcome in other countries. As you can see recently with what has happened in the wine industry, Sweden and Denmark have started to ban and are saying the parliament in Sweden have just said they are not buying South African wines, some of South African wines, because of the conditions. So it's very important. That's why we've issued this booklet for what companies can do to be good business practices. And we really think this is going to help, because if we don't show that we are good, we follow good business practices, we're going to lose markets like we are starting to lose. But I'm saying on this one about Robertson Winery, we are actually working with Proudly South Africa to see that we can send a delegation to Denmark and then Sweden to hopefully keep open our markets. But on condition, we do, the companies must then ensure that they have fair labor conditions and practices, and they start coming out of the 18th century. Then on the SEZ, as I said, we've also launched the Black Industrialist program that came to effect in January this year, but in 2015 we finalized all the policy and programs for the Black Industrialist policy. We've launched the Special Economic Zone Advisory Board, as I said, talking about the application from Mpumalanga, which is coming, which they're currently dealing with. This is the board that considers all the applications for new IDZs. So they've just recently passed the one from Mosina in Limpopo, and they are currently dealing with the other one. This is part of putting all the machinery in place for the special economic zones. We've also issued a handbook on how we can develop what we call supplier parks or business incubators. Then let me turn to Tumelo Baleni section, CCRD, which is the regulations. Important work was done. As you know, we've now rebranded and rechanged the act for the national lotteries so that they can operate more effectively. The main change here is that the distribution of the lotteries, which I think the chair is very familiar with, is instead of having part-time distribution agencies, they are now full-time in terms of the new act, so that it's their full-time job to distribute the proceeds of our lotteries to good causes, and we've got our new revitalized National Lotteries Commission. Similarly, we've been working on the credit front, especially we've set the threshold for credit providers. We've strengthened the powers of the National Credit Regulator, and then we've also beefed up our capacity in the National Liquor Authority, and the walk-in center is now available, but also we've improved the case management system for the issuing of the liquor licenses. Also, we've done work, and it will be coming to Parliament early in the new year. It's a new gambling policy, but as we indicated, we've got really serious problems emerging in excess gambling and excess consumption of liquor, and we've had to develop new policies for both gambling and liquor, and that will be dealt with in the new year. This is also just a crackdown of what we've done, but as I said, we are picking up serious problems in these sectors. This is the one of illegal illegal liquor outlets in Mpumalanga. But let's just say DTI is not only just about the industrial policy, it's also about creating a fair regulatory environment. Also, we're doing work on proudly South Africa is a very important issue. We need to, our imports are still too high, and we need to really set a tone for buying local, and this is our Buy Back South Africa campaign, which we launched in Mafeking, Mahikeng in Northwest. Turning then to the administration, very quick highlights. As I said, we still haven't passed the holy grail, which is our target of 50% women in senior management. We had 49. We have exceeded our target on disability, 3%. Of people employed in disability, and the other one, I think we still need work to do on our vacancy rate. But the one area which we are very proud of and which we are championing with throughout government, our CFO is running workshops on the 30-day payment. We pay most of our suppliers within 15 days, and we are now. Our CFO has been going to Department of Defense, to Health, and others so that we can get this across government, because the cash flow to small business is really essential. And if government, with its big budgets, can't pay within 30 days, it's a real problem. And but that's why we've put in place a system, and if you just get the system right, you can do it. And we're very proud of that achievement. We've also been recognized as the best performing department, and then also from the presidency, from DPME in terms of impact, we were runners up. And then also we've been recognizing, we're trying to build this as the premier business awards where we honor and show our appreciation for our entrepreneurs and our business people. This was done in last year, and then our new one will be, I hope most part of members will come and attend, but it will be in early December this year. We will have the South African Premier Business Award, but this is our annual event. And then also a part of our outreach program is the Mandela Day event, which was held in Oaktown in the Northern Cape. Financial performance, again, the one thing we are finally achieving our goal, which is we've spent almost 100% of our allocated budget of 9.5 billion, and again, over 76% of that budget goes directly into investments, co-investments with the private sector, and as I said, that is an achievement we're working on. So this graph just shows over the years, and we finally hit the target with 99% spending of government's budget. Audit outcome, we've got an unqualified audit, we've got a few findings, but all of those findings are of a very, very highly technical nature. At least we can assure committee all our systems are strong and in place. It was just technical issues, like, for example, we mobilize, in addition to DTI budget, we go to the skills fund and we do training. We do training for young people, and then when we reported on the entire number of people we trained, inclusive of the National Skills Fund, but the AEG found we must only report on the DTI portion of the budget. So it's a technical issue like that. Similarly, the technical issue that they dealt with was obviously our foreign economic representatives, when they stay overseas for the 4 years, we have to lease housing for them. In our report, because we are handing over this budget to Durco, we only reflected 1 year of the of our foreign lease commitments, and then we said this matter will now be handled by Durco, but the AEG felt we must reflect it for the next few years. So it's technical matters of that nature that has been raised, but as I said, it is still an unqualified audit report. Honourable Chair, I think that concludes the presentation.
Thank you very much, DG, and your team that worked with you in the preparation of that. Allow me just, as members prepare to engage with the report, to say that if we look at the percentage of your budget that is allocated to the entities, inviting us to just affirm or confirm what we've said earlier. It's therefore even more important, if we do our work properly, that we should look at the reports of those entities that are receiving money through the DTI. So I wanted to say it in this part of the meeting as well, just to emphasize the importance of us having their reports, please. The second thing that I want to say, which begins to raise the question from my side, is that our responsibility as primarily legislative. Now, if we look at laws that you have said you're going to pass, and what you have processed, there is a huge imbalance. The question, therefore, DG, would be maybe to explain to us what's the reasons for those laws not being processed as per the APP. The second question that I want to raise is, if you look at slide 41, the component manufacturers, I've seen the article recently by Volkswagen and the concerns that they are expressing. I see you shaking heads, so I wouldn't go into detail on that. But maybe to hear from your end what exactly is happening there. And the reason why I'm raising it is different from Volkswagen. The reason why I'm raising it is because here is potential to create more jobs for people. And if there's anything that's blocking us from unlocking that opportunity to create jobs, we would want to support you to make sure that we indeed unlock it. Honourable members, can we hear if there's any questions from your end? Honourable Mtimunye is from Mpumalanga, so we'll give him a chance. Then we'll give Honourable Nond here in front, who's from the Western Cape, and then we'll jump to the back behind the pillar is Honourable Bauda, who is also from Mpumalanga. Let's have those three hands, and then we'll take another round. Honourable Mtimunye.
Thank you, Chair. We want to appreciate the report tabled at DG and the jobs that you are creating in the job market. But I'm also very much interested to know, DG, I know you may not have the figures at the moment, the extent or the percentage to which the black people are beneficiating, not only from the jobs created, but out of the investments that are made by international corporations. How far do we make an impact in terms of that, in terms of these huge investments that we see? The issue of the film industry, I see you received and approved one application. Does it mean you received one application from Mpumalanga and approved that one, or you've got more that we received and so on? You know, I'm asking this because our people are looking at these big films of international standards that you'll get out of Hollywood. But I'm thinking more, you know, films like your documentary films that are at the same time educative of our youth around these issues of income, you know. That has begun to be troublesome. I know another department is doing that, but if your department would have partnered or have something, some kind of a relationship around the creation of a documentary film that is educative of the youngsters, of the dangers of going to that thing without parents' concern, or without even going the health screening that is supposed to be happening and introduced by government of late, and then we will then cap the casualties that we get during the Ingoma time. We've got that coming next year massively in the former one they were there in Mpumalanga next year. I know it is not possible to produce that again, but for going into the future. And also your Department of Arts and Culture, I remember they had a program at some point which in my view would constitute a very good documentary film on your national liberation route. The Khalsiban, the history of Mpumalanga, you know, very history, good history that is unwritten, that will assist us, you know, to not only to document our history, but also to get the young people into these things of film industry and film creation and directorship. The DGA, given the positive signs in terms of the growth in the economy, we hear on the other side, we hear about the rating agencies coming now in November, December. What is your take? Are we about to go into junk status as a country? If you can share.
Thank you very much. It won't be done speculatively. we'll get some facts. Honourable Lord, please take the floor.
Thank you, Chair. It was really good getting this breakdown per province. I think you're going to get a lot more questions when you come and visit us again. Because my colleague from Mpumalanga didn't say anything going through the provincial slides. I will refrain from that for now. We can delve into that going forward. Just a few things. You say every 1 rand that you invested from your side is tied to 4 rand from the private sector. Now, I assume that is not the same across all provinces. And which provinces are you struggling to get that same buy-in? And is that also why there's more investment in your KZN, Gauteng, and your Western Cape, because you get more a return on what you invest? Just quickly tied on to what the Honourable Member from Mpumalanga said, I mean, we are really not tapping into our market, the movie filmmaking industry, because we've got a country that's got everything. I mean, we've got the mountains, we've got the Karoo, we've got the oceans, and by just having these few, it just feels to me that we're not really tapping into it, and we should be a cheap destination for people coming here with the euro and the dollar. So just what are you looking at in improving that? And I assume now that those visa things have been sorted out or moving in the right direction, if you rather say it that way, that should also help in picking up there. Just on your audit findings, there's something that there's about 38 million rand that was debtors outstanding for longer than 12 months. You didn't touch on that. What is that? And then just the 16 entities, I know I can go through and try and find all of that, but some of those entities probably pull you down as well. Which ones are those, and what are you doing to come and address that? Chair, we're going to get a second round.
You can raise up to 5. You're on 4 now.
Do you want me to raise it here or in the house? just the reduction in the platinum demand internationally. I mean, we are not yet, we're still exporting the raw product. I know you say you're moving towards it, but when are we finally getting to a place that, listen, if you want to buy your steel for building and construction, countries from the United States or from Europe or wherever there's a boom would rather than start tapping into our market? And we keep saying we're moving in that direction, we're moving in that direction, but by when will we be there to start being competitive with, for instance, the cheap steel that China can provide? Because now we're sending our steel there, and then they're selling it, and that should help lift that industry again.
Very important, thanks. Honourable Bauda, can we have you, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. I greet you all with Assalamu Alaikum. I also want to compliment the department on an excellent presentation. The issue of movies, I note the DG, you've indicated that you are in discussions with Hollywood. I'm just wondering whether you guys are also considering Bollywood. Then the issue of chicory that you mentioned. Chicory grows very well, actually, in South Africa. I happened to meet the CEO of Nestle once on the plane, and we had a long discussion about this. And I asked him particularly about Mpumalanga, whether it would any indicate it. Yes, it would. So perhaps we could look at other provinces as well, because there's a big demand for this product. The other issue is, you know, I haven't heard, one of the big economies in the world, and very successful economies in the world in the last 10 to 15 years, has been that of Turkey. And the Turks are very keen to invest in South Africa. And they do have the money, the backing for it. They're one of the few countries in the world that does not owe the IMF any money. In fact, they have offered the IMF a loan that we will assist you. So this is a country that we should be looking at. And they also would like to use South Africa as to assist them to help with their investments in other parts of Africa. The other issue is that of the, okay, I welcome the issue of gambling and liquor, not because of my religious affiliations, but I think we need to look very seriously at the effects of gambling and liquor on on society in general. The issue of payment within 30 days, I think that is also very welcome indeed, because this in itself is job creation. It assists with job creation and it supports job creation in a massive, massive way, especially in small business. The chairperson, I'm just making a few comments. I'm very fast about it, so I'm not really asking any questions. So the issue of socio-economic justice, now, we really should not be waiting for a country like Sweden to come to us and give us guidelines. Really, this should be coming from us. We welcome very warmly. Socio-economic justice in our investments, this is what makes us a civilization. This will give us back our dignity and self-respect. This is very important. In all our investments, economically, socio-economic justice should be at the forefront. And I think the more we will do that, there will be no need for countries like. It is something that we welcome. Finally, the issue of young status will be directly related to what you guys do with the finance minister. Thank you very much.
Honourable Dikhale, because there were no questions there, and I know you are itching, so let's allow you. Honourable Dikhale is our princess from the province that has great potential. That's Limpopo.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everybody. I want to join my colleague in welcoming the presentation from the DG, and also to say we are really the witness of your department's work in our villages. Though my worry is you do try and help the people in employment, but because of the projects and the way they are using electricity, Eskom will end up taking everything up until they cannot even afford, and now the value of the project now will end up being useless. I don't know how you can assist on that one. The other thing, I'm really disappointed about the audit outcome. I really don't know how you can really make sure that you satisfy all the needs or the requirements that they want, so that you're also clean when it comes to money. Chairperson, allow me to say we visited Eastern Cape province last week, and this is also what is happening in our provinces. What the Honourable Voda is saying about liquor is really a big issue in the communities. Now that our former teachers did abuse the corporal punishment. They did abuse it, and now it is normal. So now the kids are doing as they wish. They buy liquor, they take liquor to the school, and it is really destroying our future leaders. So I really want to support, even though I normally ask myself when they move quickly out of the house and don't ask the questions. So today he is asking the questions. These questions are helping the community. I wish he can also think about this when we are in the house. I really support the Honourable Voda on this one of Liko. This is a serious problem. Don't know how we can solve it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DJ and your team. Can we hand back to you? I noticed that there are some members who have not yet been given a chance, so we would want to take a second round.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think we'll go very quickly, and we'll maneuver it towards comments, and my colleagues will come in as well. Chair, I think we note your point about the entities and the APPs and our reports, and we will put the system in place for you to get all those information. I think, again, Malebo will come in here, but the issue raised by Volkswagen was actually about what is the they were saying that if we don't, if we pull back on our incentives, it's going to hurt the industry, which I think is fine. We could, we are busy with, the ministry is chairing a group of with the unions and with the auto companies for a Vision 2030 for the auto industry. So as far as we are concerned, we are busy building a world-class auto industry, and there's no concern. Of course, as you know, there's always been people that have been saying we must do away with incentive-free marketeers, people who are saying we don't need these things, IMF, World Bank, who are really not interested in developing countries. They want to keep the industries in their countries, and they tell us we mustn't give incentives. But as I said, we've decided as a country we want to have an active industrial policy. But the one issue which is of concern about VW is that, and it relates to a question you've asked earlier about, I think, Tim Mounier's point about black economic empowerment. You see, we are now really trying to saying that if we're going to build an inclusive economy, we must accelerate black economic empowerment and the building of creating opportunities for black entrepreneurs. So we've gone to the auto companies and we've gone to especially Volkswagen. We've said you've been here for 60 years, but you're not even a level 8 on BEE. You're not even the lowest score on BEE. So what we've done is we've started to get tough and we've said to them, for you to qualify for the incentives, you must now at least become BEE compliant. At least get somewhere on their scorecard. But I think some of them, they've now learned their lesson, but they, so this guy, the CEO, who, as I said, we've given them lots of incentives, they asking us as government to say, where's the black suppliers? And we said to them, you are Volkswagen, you are global multinational. In the U.S., you have brought in black suppliers because of their legislation. How can you not do it here? So we've had a bit of a tiff with them, but they have actually, I mean, as multinationals are in German companies, when you do push them, they then did convene a supplier conference earlier this year, and they managed to bring in 42 new suppliers. But it looks like, again, they mustn't, as I said, they mustn't abuse the opportunity to try to create another issue, whereas they are really complaining about doing black economic empowerment. We've had intensive sessions with them, and we've told them, you must bring in black suppliers into your supply chain. And so obviously that's, I think what you're seeing there was just a little bit of a complaint about us pushing them. It's a new thing, but we know if we don't do it, you're going to end up with these incentives being withdrawn because they are not benefiting everybody and so on. I think Honorable Timounier, I think I think I've started to answer this thing. We are still very low in manufacturing. As you know, companies think they're still living before 1994, and they are still keeping their old suppliers. So, as I said, we're ramping up all of our incentives. We're saying now, you must have, for example, for MCEP, we've said level 4. You must be level 4 on the scorecard. For autos, and we're going to be upping it. So companies, as I said, it's a win-win, because I was speaking at the Austrian Chamber of Commerce on Monday, and I said, you know, companies like Siemens, they are level 2 on BEE. Level 2, they're almost close to level 1, fully compliant. If they can do it, how can VW say they can't reach level 8 if the same company in Germany, Siemens, does it? So it is not difficult to do it. There are many companies, even the American companies, IBM, Caterpillar, Dell, they've all been able to reach BE scores and so on. So it's just a question of putting in place an active strategy. There's no reason companies should not be able to reach at least level 2, level 1 on the BE scorecard. So, Honorable Timounier, this is going to be our big program for empowerment, and we are spreading this to all the investors now, because As I said, they are investing, they are benefiting, they are making good profits in this country, and they are enjoying very good incentives from government, and we are buying from them, and therefore we expect the quid pro quo on that. I think, Honourable Timoney, on the junk status issue, of course, the things are a bit difficult because we're just above, we're under 1% growth. But the one good thing is that the fundamentals of the South African economy are extremely strong. For the one reason is that apart from, as I said, 1 trillion rands of mineral reserves we have for the next 100 years, if we can, so we'll always have a strong mining industry. Obviously, it will be cyclical. And if we diversify and we grow manufacturing and agriculture, and as I said, we're starting to see the revival of manufacturing. If we can also extend the same to agriculture, I think we do have, and as I said, we do have strength as an economy. As you can see how quickly we've been able to revive our rail industry, shipbuilding industry, automotive, clothing and textile. There's a lot of technological and industrial capabilities that we have as a country. So I think that I'm not too worried about just cyclical patterns of the downgrade. But as long as we sort out the real economy and we get manufacturing and agriculture moving, I think we really have a very, very positive future as an economy. Honourable, I think on the issue that you raised about film, I'll ask Malebo to maybe touch on the issue about the film industry. But as I said, the one thing we are looking at is to help provinces with developing film studios and building more capabilities in the film industry so that we can, and I think that touches on Honourable Lund. We haven't, as I said, we're only just starting to create the basics and the ecosystem for a film industry. So obviously we've started with a big reliance on Hollywood. Honourable Wouter, we also have actually attracted some Bollywood. And then hopefully we'll be doing Nollywood from Nigeria, which is, we are trying to build local capability. So we've introduced a new incentive for black filmmakers. We're also covering more of our history. As you know, we did the Long Walk to Freedom, we've done Mandela's Gun, we've done Solomon, Mahlangu's a movie, and also we're doing serious work about the history and the documentary for O.R. Tambo. And that documentary is being worked on. It's the 100th anniversary of the birth of Oliver Tambo. So we are doing our history, and we a lot of big relationship with the lotteries as well to try to fund some of these movies. Honourable Lont, I think the question about the distribution of the provinces, as I said, that's why I did cover the special economic zones and the industrial parks and Honourable Tikhali, like we've revitalized and starting to revitalize industrial parks, Shesheho. We've done Botshabelo in the Free State, we've done Isithebe, we're doing in all the provinces, we're reviving that activity. I think the problem is the distribution of our economic activity. So it's not that one province is more competitive than the other, it's just like it's the manufacturing is concentrated in these three zones. And therefore, the companies that benefit from the incentives, they're the ones that benefit from it. So our strategic goal is to diversify the economy. And that's why we, as I said, we've created new economic zones in the other provinces, and we're working on them. And in that way, once you have those industries established there, they will then be able to access the incentive. But the problem is they are not there. The industry is not there in sufficient critical mass to benefit and so on. I think on the global demand for platinum steel, as I said, our work in the steel industry was mainly defensive because we needed to, there's 400 million tons of overproduction in the steel industry. So they're dumping it everywhere. So they're wiping out the British steel industry, they're wiping out the American steel industry, they're going to wipe out our industry if we don't just protect ourselves. So what we've done is we've set up a tariff now of 10%.
to protect us, and then we've also designated it. We're saying we must locally, we must buy local steel in our Eskom, Transnet, and so on. We must use local steel. But also we're facing a problem. So America has put up massive duties, 300% anti-dumping duties, but they've also hit our steel industry because we export to the U.S. And we're saying to them, we only export so little to them. So we've taken it up with them. Why are they also putting us with China, whereas we are now no threat to them? So we're trying to get some exemption for our, but we all, but as I said, they are very protectionist when it comes to, they don't listen to the IMF and the World Bank like other people do. You know, they protect their jobs. Even in the UK now, even the Conservative government, as the state is buying out the steel mills. So the state government is investing in the steel industry in the UK, but as you know, they lecture to us about not getting involved in local. And then I think finally, I think the Malaz Blaney will come in. As I said, there's a new bill that's coming to you on the liquor, and that is we're raising the age to 21, and we want Parliament to debate that issue. But obviously you need, it can't just be the law, it must be a major educational and public program. But I think that is the target which we must focus on. And that will be, as I said, it's been approved by Cabinet. It's out for public comment now, but that will be the big debate for hopefully when the state law advisors passes the bill through Parliament, then it will come to before you on that one. My colleagues will come in, Malebo.
Thanks, DG. On the question about the movies and whether the stats here are reflective of the applications, they indeed are. It is not to say that we've got, say, 40 applications from Mpumalanga and we only approved one. We have very low offtake from Mpumalanga, and that is where the issue is. The one problem, particularly for the local producers, is where they then go and sell the product to, for people to view their material. And what we've done, we're now working with the SABC, that for local movies, we have an agreement with them that where we have supported those movies, they give some form of a guarantee that for the local ones, they will flight them. And then what we're working with them on is around their own issues on content and all those kind of things. How do we also give them comfort that the movies that we will support are of a sufficient quality for the requirements of their viewership. So that's how we are trying to stimulate demand for the incentive from the provinces that we've seen very little offtake, to at least secure the market side so that the business case is feasible. And as DG has said, we're working with everybody. We are telling them this is your neck of the woods. So if you're Hollywood, if you're whoever else, come to South Africa. We want to share with you in your story, and in doing so that you also assist us with developing a talent pool and exposing the talent that is in South Africa. So we're working with everybody. Hollywood still has a major chunk of the value in the movie industry. So the more we work with them, the more we are able to ensure that a large chunk of the value of the industry also finds itself in South Africa. That is just one of the reasons. But then, of course, we work with Bollywood and we work with Nollywood. We work with everybody. And increasingly, we are seeing the result of that with a number of awards that our movies are now securing in international markets. Not only in film, also in animation, we are making very strong strides. And we also support documentaries as a form of of a creative product in our incentives. So documentaries, we support very strongly. We want to increase the work that we do with provinces to make sure that people know about the incentives and about the support that they can get. We're still worried that when we look at the stats and we see Johannesburg and Gauteng, sometimes we don't factor in the fact that most of those people don't come from Johannesburg and Gauteng. They've had to travel here because that's where they perceive they can get most of the opportunities. So that is the work that we are doing with the provinces.
CFO.
Thanks, DG, and good morning to the honourable colleagues. The question around the impairment of receivables. The impairment of the receivables is not an audit finding, as per se, but rather that has an impact that really impacts the overall audit outcome. But it's really an emphasis of matter which the Auditor General highlights in the audit report. If you look at the auditing standards, an emphasis of matter is a paragraph which the auditor includes just to highlight to the user so that the user gets a better understanding of the financial statements. But it's not a finding that has an impact on the overall audit outcome. Hence, we haven't included it in the presentation. The impairment of receivables is purely an accounting transaction. It's an accounting requirement as per the prescribed accounting standards, and it actually requires one to assess the recovery of receivables within the next 12 months of the balance sheet date. The question around the audit outcomes, yes, I mean, you know, we continuously strive to achieve the best audit outcome. The minister has set a very high standard for us. He always says we need to achieve the highest possible audit outcome, and that's a clean audit. And the two issues are purely issues that, you know, it was such a matter that was such differences of opinion that it could have went either way, and we could still have achieved a clean audit. But what we are doing is we will meet with the Auditor General within the next 2 weeks just to have a proper debriefing of what happened during the last audit, but also to put in proper plans so that we don't have such issues being raised during the next audit. So, you know, those are the type of actions which we will take. The comment around the 30 days, yes, I think it's gaining traction across government. I'm part of a task team that is being chaired by DPME, and we met quite a few departments, and we can already see that there's a change in the behavior, in the culture of some of the departments, in understanding the importance of the 30 days. It's a lot currently within the provincial government, but we are working with them to ensure that we do put in place systems and processes that will assist them. The other key thing is that the previous set of treasury regulations only made it a requirement for national departments and provincial departments to apply, but not the public entities. But the new regulations, which will be implemented from the 1st of April, also prescribes that all public entities as well must comply with the 30-day requirement. So these are some of the legislative and some of the process issues which we are assisting a lot of the other departments just to implement so that they improve on this. Thank you.
Just Chair, on your question about your role as apart from the oversight by the legislature, there's two bills, and this is the delays. It's the Performers Protection Amendment Bill and the Copyright Amendment Bill. This one, we are meeting with them. I think Sir Roger is trying to set up a meeting, but the bills are still with the state law advisors.
and we hope to get that out soon and into the legislative process. And then the two other bills is the gambling and the liquor. And as you know, it was approved by Cabinet, but it was asked that we put it out again for public consultation because of the sort of the importance and also the controversial nature. We are asking for quite drastic interventions in those two areas. So that is still out. The consultation process is a bit longer, but it should be. We are trying to maybe call a big Lekotla type indaba around these two bills, so that is the delay around liquor and gambling. Thank you very much. We are having a presentation before we adjourn for this year from the DTI on the liquor bill. And the strategy that we had on Robert Dikhale behind that is precisely because of the concerns that you and other members in the House are raising with regard to the impact that it is having, particularly on our learners. So while we are busy looking at the bill, there are a lot of other things that present legislation enables the department to do. And the department has reported, at least on the one in Mpumalanga, we have had a similar report from the department about interventions that has happened in Eastern Cape. So the onus is on us then as well to look in the meantime at where the challenges are rife and through the proper channels raise it with the department so that they could look at addressing some of that. I know that one of the big ones that we've had in Soweto is just next to Regina Mundi Church, where people were running a shebeen. So you have a big service and they're having a gumba there. And when it was reported to us, we got the police to just go there purely on the basis of our culture to say to people that this is not acceptable. We ask you to please close the shebeen. And we've been to Regina Mundi the other day. You couldn't see it. It's gone. They make lots of noise. You know, there's certain things that goes together. But there are two questions that you have not answered. I'll help you with one because I understand the content. The one raised by Honorable Dikhale about the cost of electricity. Honorable Dikhale, what is happening is the department is starting these IDZs and the development centers and centers for agro-processing and bringing the entrepreneurs together in one space, because that would contribute in a number of ways. What they are not mentioning is, for example, if you're producing apples, because it comes from your province, you need to put them in a fridge, otherwise they're going to go off. So you have an industrial park, you will have refrigeration there, but it comes at a cost. The advantage is that if you have more than one operator, industrialist in that space, it cuts the cost. So we are not leaving it open to black industrialists to find the spaces for themselves. DDI is setting up these spaces so that when they are together, the cost would be lower, but the cost would be inevitable. We will, with the department, there's a meeting this afternoon, the study group that I want to attend at 3 o'clock, on these people that reported to us the other day on electricity and gas, and the reason why I'm CEF, and the reason why I'm interested is precisely because of this problem that you're raising about the cost of electricity. So I'm trying to help you with that one. But the other one I'm leaving to you, DG, which is the question raised by Honorable Lond, about whether there are any returns on these incentives. that you have mentioned. Am I capturing it wrong? You mentioned the 1 rand and the 4 rand from the industry. Does it benefit the country? But he'll recap.
Yeah, he answered it in a way about that there's the three areas that it's better to invest. My question was more, they maybe should have phrased it differently. What cost is it then in your smaller provinces to actually invest so that when we get asked, listen, why don't you invest as much in province X, you'll be able to say, but listen, the return on investment, when we invest 1 rand, the private sector only invests another 1 rand compared to Gauteng, the Western Cape, and KZN. So I want to find out which provinces you get the least buy-in. And then the thing that was missed was just which of the 16 entities under you are actually pulling you down, and it's not at the expected audit levels that you want them to be.
And give us the correct number.
In terms of our entities, let me take the last one first. Haley's here. But we really, most of our entities have actually been showing very, very good improvements. So many of them have now kept their clean audit. So many of them are going to the Auditor General's awards next week, where 6-7 of our entities are getting clean audits. So we've taken all of them quite forward and so on. We have we've overcome the big one, which was, as you know, CIPC, when it used to be the Cipro. They used to have a qualified audit. They again now have overcome their audit, so they have sorted out that, and they've put in a new. Their issue was again debtors, because as you know, when you register a company, you pay and. They've put in place a proper system, so they've moved from qualified to qualified, unqualified. And so there is only one that is still on our radar screen, and that is the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, NRCS. Those are the ones we've put on the top of our high-risk list. We've got a plan with them. We've got also we've got a high-level technical team. The group COO and Garth Strachan are the two DDGs that are sitting with them on a quarterly basis for them to improve that system. So that is our one entity that is on our watch list. But the others are really have all National Gambling Board have come on board and so on. Then on the issue of, as I said, this is a really a difficult area of economics. This issue about diversifying economic activity, but I mean in economics they've got a term called agglomeration economies. That is when firms concentrate together. Like for example, say you take the automotive industry in Eastern Cape. Because they've been there for 30, 40 years, the skills are there, the suppliers are there, and an entire ecosystem develops. So if you want to set up a new plant, that's why you can see, for example, when Beijing Automotive Works wanted to set up a new plant, we took them to all the IDZs. They chose the Eastern Cape because, of course, what they're going to get there is they're close to the port when they want to export to Mombasa and to... Europe, they also got the skills there because people know about automotives. There's also Goodyear is there, Shatterproof is there, your suppliers are right there close by. And that is, so the concept is to get industry is not to get one company coming at a time. It's to be able, and that's why we've created these, we're reviving, like in Shashejo, Botsabelo, we're reviving industrial parks, industrial districts, and special economic zones. So that once you get a number of companies come together, they then also create the conditions for them to. So that's the problem now. If you take the Northern Cape, Upington, and so on, there's only two or three manufacturers there, and therefore others. Same with the film industry, you see, once you hit a critical mass, people come there. But as I said, so we are trying to create the opposite force by, as the chairman explained, by providing cheap land in these industrial parks, cheap land, cheap electricity, but also you have the suppliers there, and you create some special incentives for people to go in there. You create the critical mass for these industries. So I think, and as you say, then the productivity is all automatically higher once you're in a in an area which has the skills, which has the suppliers close by, and so on. And that is why we've got this big special economic zones program. Yeah, and maybe Stephen could expand on it.
Thanks, Chair. If I could perhaps add to the answer that you gave to Honourable Dikhale on the Eskom issues. I mean, there's three broad areas of intervention. The one is that DTI was one of the five core departments in the energy war room a year and a half, 2 years ago, when South Africa was experiencing the big power outages and lack of capacity. So the department did play a core role in looking at the different interventions that could be implemented to address the supply challenges. The second area is that in terms of the engagements with NERSA on the electricity pricing, in terms of the engagement through the economic cluster, DGs and ministers for the DTI plays an active role in terms of sensitizing other departments on the impact that high electricity prices have on the manufacturing sector, on the agricultural and agro-processing sector, and the productive sectors overall. So DTI has consistently been saying that this the rapid increases in electricity prices that we've seen over the last 5 years have had a major impact on a range of sectors, and that as government we need to be looking at what we do to keep those increases to an absolute minimum. The third area is a much more direct intervention, and that's through the MSEP program that DTI has been implementing. One of the windows that companies can apply for, and pack houses in the agro-processing sector have applied quite extensively for this window, which is renewable energy. So a company can apply and say, well, our electricity bill at the moment is 50,000 Rand per month. We want to reduce that because it's making us uncompetitive. We want to put up photovoltaic panels or solar panels or installed heat pumps. And we pay somewhere in the order of about 30% of the capital cost through the MSEP incentive to the company directly. So we've been trying to intervene in that area, and as members will be aware, the MSEP program has been suspended because of funding constraints. We're very hopeful that that some funding will be found over the next few years through the National Treasury process to be able to restart accepting applications, but that would be a practical area where DTI has provided the incentive for lowering the electricity cost. It also applies for other resource costs such as water costs, where we've also seen an increase in water pricing over the last few years. So that incentive is there. Hopefully, when funds are found, we'll be able to reopen applications, and perhaps we can then engage directly with the Honourable Member to make sure that that window is available, and that we've provided you with the information about what the entry requirements are. Thanks, Chair.
Ken. Hey, no, she's smiling and winking. But I wanted to get an indication. I see three hands, so okay, let's have you first.
Mine is not long. I just want to say as they are looking on the water pricing, they should consider even using the, maybe coming up with a plan of bringing in the windmills, especially in our area where there's air. It can help because that one is free. We don't buy air. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Khai is from that province where we have the big investment from the Chinese Eastern Cape. Honourable Khai, please. Let me also just say to you, because he's important, you see, he is the chairperson, he's just been elected now as the chairperson of our Select Committee on Economic and Business Development.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just that I missed out on this presentation, but also the disadvantage I had was that I did not have any document with regard to the presentation. All I had was an analysis from a researcher, which is just a few pages. It is not detailed. So I'll just ask a general question, but also the point that I pick up from the analysis, perhaps some of them have been addressed. I heard that the doctor was responding to the issue of this. I pick up in the document, the analysis, that there were about 8 bills that have not been tabled or passed or brought to Parliament for one reason or that. But the general question I wanted to ask was, on your assessment, you had the IDZ, as is indicating that I'm from the Eastern Cape. There was East London IDZ, but now I'm sure it's called the IZ. So in your assessment, are the SEZ doing better compared to when they were called the IDZ? Because when we visited the IDZ last year, there was a concern that with regard to the funding, because the IDZ, they were the line item in the budget of the DTI. But now as the SEZ, they were to compete with other zones. That was a concern raised. But my question is, in your own assessment, are the SEZ doing better compared to when they were IDZ? So that's the question I just wanted to find out. But also, he's talking about the big investment in the Eastern Cape. The other question related to that is, there are two big towns in the Eastern Cape, East London and Port Elizabeth. There tend to be some competition among the two. I know this the recent investment you're talking about. I think East London first lobby for such an investment, but all of a sudden it was then given to Port Elizabeth. Government, isn't it creating deindustrialization in some areas in provinces? Shouldn't you also consider that? But also linked to the issue of IGR, as you as a department developing industries for the industrial police, do you also check whether another department is not doing opposite? The example I'm having is that of what caused the deindustrialization in the Eastern Cape, perhaps also in the Northern Cape, was the closure of rail lines. I know it's in another department, so that's why I'm coming to the issue of IGR or clusters, whether in the clusters you don't discuss such issues. So why you try to industrialize? Isn't another department doing the opposite? So those kinds of things, if you take them into account. The last point on the industrial parks, how do the DTI is talking about industrial parks. Rural development is talking about village parks. Is there any link between the two?
Thank you very much. Honourable High is at a disadvantage because we've had a long presentation on the request of Honourable Timunia that was done on the SEZs for us. Maybe you need to request your secretary to help you get that documentation. It would help in that. Honourable Tebe, can we have you as a last contributor?
I'm going to try and limit my to
because we'd want to leave in 5 minutes, incorporating the responses as well.
Yeah, let me limit myself to a comment rather than DG and your team. Memalem, I want, and this is not the first time that I'm raising this. I know that Honorable Lord understands the logic of your approvals. But I want us to really look into the matter that, you know, DG, we go to international forums and we argue when other nations want to characterize ourselves as developed and therefore we must be taken away from whether you AGOA or whatever in you. But when we come into our own country, we perpetually project and continue to sow the seed that was there in the past, continue to invest into already developed provinces. If you look at all your approvals here, they are shying away from investing more into the rural provinces. I'm from the Northwest. I'm from the most rural part of this country. And I can tell you now, look at your, all your approvals. We can't even come closer to Gauteng. In all things. Limpopo was having some sort of an approval last year for 2050, to for the next financial year it has gone down to Mpumalanga. Limpopo is where so we are not creating a new normal. We are instead used to this thing that because already there's infrastructure in whatever, in Kuha, in where, that's where we must be able to put our. But how do we stimulate and enhance, and I can quote this chair from the top of my head. One of our visions says we must build, enhance and stimulate the potential of all citizens. All citizens. That's what we say. So how do we reach those that are in the periphery of the periphery? Mm-hmm. How do we reach them? We have Springbok Ban in Northwest, where you have invested. The rail infrastructure has collapsed. Yes, we understand it's the aftermath of the De Villiers Commission in 1986. We understand those dynamics. But what are we doing? Local content in Springbok Ban, beneficiation in Springbok Ban. When you have stimulated and create appetite there in Springbok Ban, how are you going to make sure that export your... Right now, it's a positive development. Our trade surplus is becoming to... I don't know how are we going to get this right, but we need to do something. We can't continue to give KZN, Western Cape and Gauteng more of the allocations when smaller provinces are suffering. It can't be. I don't understand this thing. Yes, the appetite must not be there, but who's supposed to create it?
Okay. I'm going to give you DG 3 minutes.
The last one. Is it a trade deficit or a trade surplus? Page 30.
I'll try to take a few seconds easily. Thanks for saving us, because I was having difficulty with the last question. On the surplus, it's a surplus, yeah. So the exports have exceeded the imports. Mm. So that is the positive trend. Very quickly, just on the entities, the earlier question, we've got 10 entities that have got clean audits. So as I said, we have been working very actively. Unfortunately, the DTI let the others down this year, so we can't join them at the Auditor General's Awards to get our Clean Audit Awards this year as well. But we'll have 10 representatives there. So we've tried to... 10. Out of 15. 13 now. Oh, we've given some to... Some of these ministers take away our entities sometimes. Honourable Khai, I think thanks for that. As I said, I can't go into more detail, but you are raising all the precise things. But let me just say on the question of Kuha, and I see they have been lobbying you already, but as you know, the way that it used to work is that there used to be we've now got an SEZ fund, but it's actually worked out very well, especially for Kuha as well. So what we do is instead of giving just one or two IDZs all the money, we've now said we're working on 10 new SEZs. And we've got one central fund, and you apply. But what it does is it creates an incentive for everybody to go and get an investor, because you get money as soon as you come and you get the investor, you get the money. So it's not guaranteed, because what you do is people used to then become lazy because they're going to get the money. They don't have to. Now we're tying it. And that is why we're seeing the really good work from Kuha now. And as I said, they have now finally landed their anchor, big investment.
with the Beijing Automotive Works one. But also it's not the only one. They've actually done quite well. So I think the SEZ has been positive. We already see the results. Saldanha have taken off. Richards Bay have taken off. Dube Trade Port. We've got the one in the Free State, Maluti Pofong, which is also taking off. Just, I think I agree with the last speaker. That is our duty, is to change the patterns and to overcome our legacy. The question must just be the how. As I said, we're trying to say, let's put in place this new industrial parks program, and let's get the SEZ in every province. So that is our goal. So, example, on the Northern Cape, we are not only sitting back in Pretoria, we are actively, to all the provinces, we've sent out, we pay for the provinces to employ people to work on their IDZ or SEZ. So, for example, in Northern Cape, we have been assisting the province there to develop the Upington IDZ for solar and to work on the, to mobilize around, because the RIPP program has been very successful in the Northern Cape, and we're working on that, but we're working on every province. In Northwest, we're working on the platinum fuel cells in Rustenburg. We're working on that SEZ for that one, Mpumalanga, all of them, and they are very far advanced now with the SEZ. So we're hoping to overcome this legacy this program. I think, again, you can't be in one country and in one market, then you're not competing with each other. You're reinforcing each other. Because if PE wins something, it means they're employing more people, they're demanding more products, they're going to need supplies from East London, from the rest of the country, and so on. So it's a win-win. Whoever, an investment in any part of the country is positive for the rest of the economy, and so on. So there's no competition between us. Whoever lands the investment builds the whole economic base, and so on. I think, I don't know, maybe a colleague can just end off. Stephen can all be able to just add one or two things, but I think we're on course.
Chair, maybe very, very briefly, just in response to Honourable Tebe on the spread of economic activity. So DG's talked to SEZs, IDZs, and industrial parks. The third area is the agri-parks that you mentioned. So there are 44 that have been prioritized by Department of Rural Development, working with DTI and agriculture. And the idea is in those agri-parks where you've got a province like Limpopo and Mpumalanga, that's a relatively rural province, doesn't have as much industrial capability, but there's agro-processing capability. We really leverage in the resources to get that sector off the ground. The way the figures are constructed, I mean, for example, on the slide on MCEP, if you were to break MCEP down into the different sectors, you'd actually see a large number of applications from Limpopo, from Mpumalanga, for projects that are in the agriculture sector. I think part of it is that in the way we've aggregated industrial sector plus agriculture, you don't necessarily see it. But if you look in the provinces that are producing substantial amounts of citrus, of subtropical fruits, deciduous fruits, we are putting significant investment into those provinces for agro-processing. And that's really, the critical area where we can shift the province quite quickly, where there's agricultural and agro-processing potential, the investments will follow. It's relatively difficult, as the Director General was saying, to create a new industry in a province where there hasn't been an auto sector for 20, 30, 40 years. But where we can do that is around the agri-parks and agro-processing. We've seen it in the Western Cape over the last 100 years, where you've got cooperatives that grew over time because of government support under the previous government, where we need to now begin to invest is to say, how do we build those co-ops in Limpopo and Mpumalanga in Northwest, in Northern Cape, where the agricultural potential clearly is there. And that's really what the Agri-Parks initiative is about. DTI is a core player and supporter of that initiative, and we fully part of the Agri-Parks intervention. Thanks, Chair.
That's where the IGR comes in. Do you want to conclude? You covered.
TJ? Yeah,
there was not issue of the industrialization.
You see, I said the industrialization is part of the legacy issue. And for example, I mean, if you just take the one of Saldanha and with the manganese in the Northern Cape Sishen, properly speaking, that manganese, the rail line and everything should have been built to the Eastern Cape to be it's quicker and is the population is bigger in PE. So you should have, and that whole line should have been built. But because of the previous government, because the MP was very popular in Saldanha, and it's a labor scarce area, there was no labor. People had to come from the Western Cape and go to Saldanha to work there and build Saldanha Steel. So, but they built the railway line from Sishen to Saldanha. We've now rectified that. As you know, the manganese, Eskom is using, they're going to be, Transnet. We're creating the new manganese beneficiation, everything, and it's going to go via the port of Kuha. So now it will have to be investing in that rail line between Sishen and the Eastern Cape, and so on. And as said, we're building the Saldanha around oil and gas industry, and that's why they're going to have the new gas plant and so on. So the large part of the country, because blacks were excluded, were the parts where blacks lived was deindustrialized. So we have to overcome that legacy deliberately by reinvesting in those areas. That's why I said we've been very glad for the support there. So we started with 10 industrial parks, right from Vulindlela in Mthatha to Botshabelo to Shishego to Harankua, Babalehi, others. We're reviving all those parks because that's where the population is, and we're taking back industry. I mean, if you take the question of Botshabelo, which is 60 kilometers out of Bloemfontein, but people will move from Bloemfontein to Botshabelo, but now it's there. But we've revived that area, but there's 10,000 people employed in that area. So we as said, we have to now actively reindustrialize the country as it should have been. If it was just normal free market operating, it would have, those areas would have industrialized naturally. But now we have to, in a sense, overcome the legacy. That's why the debate is just, but we have to be much more active, and then also you have to go against the companies who are used to doing business in the normal way, whether it's our grape farmers or whether it's Volkswagen in Utenek for 60 years and zero black suppliers. How can it be that you have zero black suppliers and you've been located in the country for 60 years? It is just, so that's why we are working with them. But that's why we mustn't also criticize investment, even if it's in the urban area, because we are doing a pact with Volkswagen. We are saying you grow, but it's a quid pro quo. We support your condition now that you bring in place, and develop that whole Uteneg area with new black entrepreneurs, and they're doing very well now. You're getting now black companies who are now becoming first tier suppliers so quickly. They've just done it for the past 6-8 months.
Thank you very much to you and your team. I'm having three members that's pushing me, and then we're not going to be coders anymore, and I don't want to be whooped. Let me, on behalf of the members, say to Team DTI again, thank you very much for the report that you've given to us. Appreciate that. The meeting is adjourned.